welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier, and in this hour, crime stories. Later on, The Whistler from 1947, but right now, Stotts Cotsworth portrays Casey, crime photographer. This episode first aired on CBS, kicking off their 1954 season from January 13th of that year. The story called Road Angel.
First on the scene, crime photographer. Got it. Look for it in the Morning Express. CBS Radio brings back Crime Photographer, another adventure of Casey, ace cameraman of the Morning Express, who covers the crime news of a great city. With the original cast, author and director, Crime Photographer, played by Stotts Cotsworth and written by Alonzo Dean Cole, tonight presents Road Angel. Morning, an infrequently traveled side road at the far northern limits of our wide, sprawling city. Police cars are there, and a grim-looking enclosed truck which bears the legend City Mortuary. Another car appears, draws to a halt, and discharges Casey and Ann Williams.
Captain Logan and the tech men are back among those trees, Casey.
Yeah, I see him, Annie. Hi, Logan.
Hello. Morning, Miss Williams.
Oh, hi, Captain Logan.
Hi, Charlie, Pete, Frank.
Hi, Casey.
Well, who's been killing who today?
That I don't know yet. This guy was bumped off sometime last night.
Mm-hmm. He was a big man.
Yeah. Looks like whoever shot him collected a little trouble himself, Miss Williams. Look at the skin knuckles on his right hand.
A big boy here must have taken a healthy poke at somebody and connected, huh?
Uh-huh.
Two bullet holes in his head. Size 38 caliber, I'd say.
38 is right, Casey. We've already found one of the slugs. The other's still inside his skull.
Okay for pictures, Logan?
Go ahead. My tech guys have got their stuff.
Thank you, pal.
Any identification on the body, Captain?
Plenty, Miss Williams. His name was Edward Pierce, and he was a farm machinery salesman in Ardmore, about 200 miles upstate. The killer took all his dough and his car, but didn't bother with his jewelry or personal papers, including car registration and driver's license.
A robbery motive, then, hmm?
Looks like.
Hitchhiker job, Logan.
That's my guess. Whoever he picked up must have pulled a gun and forced him out of his car here. Pierce took a poke at him, and bang, bang. A kid cutting through this patch of woods on his way to school this morning discovered the body.
Too bad this job wasn't done a little to the north of here, Logan, outside the city limits, huh?
Yeah, less than half a mile, and cops in the next county would have had the headache.
Mm-hmm.
Why does everything happen to me?
Blue Note Cafe, Ethelbert the bartender speaking. You want Doyle and Kirschbaum's dry goods store? I'm sorry, lady, but this is one of the wrongest numbers you could get. Dry goods store.
Hi, Ethelbert.
Hello, Casey.
Hi, Ethelbert. You got any coffee in the kitchen, huh?
Sure, Casey. Walter, bring out a cup of coffee and bring out some more olives. You just coming to work, Casey?
No, I've been out on assignment already this morning and way out, too.
Anything interesting?
Hitchhiker robbery and murder, apparently.
Gee, where's Miss Williams?
She's across the street in the city room banging out her story.
Here you are, Casey. Thanks, Walter. Tell me about this hitchhiker murder. Was it very gory?
No, pal. Just run of the mill. As it stands now, it'll rate no more than a few sticks on page 4 and maybe one of the pictures I shot in 2 Column Square.
Oh, that's too bad.
Morning, Ethelbert.
Here's Miss Williams.
Hello, Annie. Didn't take you long to finish your job.
Well, you know how little there was to write. But now we got to do some follow-up stuff. Burke wants us to stick around homicide and get any inside dope that comes in.
Okay, Burke's the editor, so Burke's the boss. But he ought to know by this time that any on-the-record inside dope we get from Logan is also what every other paper gets.
Well, Burke says to feed the captain truth serum.
Well, let's go.
Yeah, I'll see you later, Ethelbert.
So long, pal.
Goodbye. I've heard of truth serum. Now, I wonder...
just informed several of your competitors, Miss Williams. The state police found Pierce's car, undamaged and containing some very interesting exhibits.
Well, how nice for our competitors, Captain. What are the exhibits?
A fully loaded 9mm Italian Beretta pistol. It was wedged out of sight between the cushions of the front seat. And some beautiful fingerprints on the car door of a hoodlum named Carl Flagler, who was paroled about a month ago.
Oh, well, it looks like you're pretty close to your killer then, huh?
Seems so. There's an 8-state alarm out for Flagler. Yeah, it'll be a relief to have an easy one for a change. Excuse me.
Go ahead.
I'm inside. Captain Logan speaking. Put him on. State police again, Casey.
Yeah.
Hello, Colonel. You have? Oh, that's just swell. Say, that really does it. And what did the punk say? Sure, they're all innocent. Oh, you bet I'll come up. And see you this afternoon, Colonel, and thanks a million. They've got Flagler at headquarters barracks in Clinton County. And when he was picked up, he had cartridges for that 9mm Beretta pistol in his pockets.
Well, looks like everything's over but the execution.
You know, it's a nice day for a drive up to Clinton County, Annie. We'd be getting away from some humdrum work. Maybe the boss is...
I'll call Burke right away and ask him.
Yeah, tell him we can go in Logan's car and save the paper gas mileage.
You chiseler.
Say, Logan, you know, tying Flagler up with a 9mm foreign pistol kind of unties him from the 38 revolver slug that went into Pierce's head.
I've been trying not to think of that. What are you trying to do, spoil a beautiful day? Listen, Flagler, be good to yourself and come clean. You finally admitted to the state police that Pierce gave you a lift in his car?
Sure I did. What else could I do after they told me what they had on me? Now look, copper. I did thrum a ride from that big lug you call Pierce, and I did have that foreign gat in my pocket. And I did try to pull a stick up on Pierce with it. That's where the big difference comes in between what you think happened and what really happened.
Let's hear the big difference, Flagler.
Well, I've been trying to tell you. Look, I pulled my rod and told this guy to stop his car and get out. He did like I said, and I got out after him. Then I make a mistake and come too close to him. He grabs my gun and gives me a sock on the jaw that almost laid me out. Well, all I could do was run, and that's what I did. I didn't kill him. He nearly killed me.
That bruise in your jaws from the sock he gave you?
Yeah. And look at these loose teeth, huh? They prove I'm telling the truth, don't they?
We can prove enough to burn you, Flagler. No jury will doubt that you killed Pierce.
But I didn't. He was alive the last time I saw him, and he had my gun. I didn't have nothing to kill him with.
You could have had two guns, couldn't you?
I didn't. I swear I didn't. I tell you.
I'm through with him for the time being, Colonel.
All right, Jimmy. Take him away, Sergeant.
Come on, Casey.
Okay.
What do you think, Colonel?
Well, about the same as you do, I imagine, Captain. Maybe yes, maybe no.
Casey?
Well, if he did shoot him, why didn't he wipe his fingerprints off the car? The dumbest crook knows enough to do that.
Who can tell, Casey? Who can tell? Colonel... You sure your tech man didn't find even a trace of any prints in that car, excepting those of Flagler and Pierce himself?
Only a few smudges that couldn't be developed. Pierce had washed and polished the car himself just before he left his home.
Only a few hours ago, Casey, this looked like a beautiful day.
Anything new on that hitchhiker murder, Miss Williams?
Well, plenty. Ethelbert, haven't you seen the Morning Express yet?
Why, no. A fella left a Morning Globe on the bar here, so instead of buying your paper, I...
You know, just imagine this fella. He'd rather save a nickel than read fresh news, Annie.
I gotta be saving, Casey, when a certain friend of mine has owed me $16.50 for two whole weeks.
Look, I told you, you'll get it out of my paycheck this Saturday. And incidentally, it's $15.60, not $16.50.
Casey, I distinctly remember...
Oh, so do I. $15.60.
What's plenty new on that case, Miss Williams?
Well, another robbery and murder. Apparently by a hitchhiker on the same highway between here and Ardmore.
Yeah?
Yeah. Guy's body was found last night. He was shot by the same .38 that killed Pierce.
And Carl Flagler was in jail when it happened.
That proves...
It at least proves that Flagler didn't pull the second job.
Yeah. Is this new killing up to Captain Logan?
No. It's outside of his jurisdiction. You know what I can't get through my head is how could Pierce have been dumb enough to pick up another hitchhiker after Flagler had tried to stick him up just a little early?
Well, maybe he didn't. Maybe he picked up somebody he knew.
Well, either that or...
What's the big hum for?
You know, most guys will pick up a woman, Annie, and under any circumstances, especially if she's reasonably young and good-looking.
Oh, the voice of experience.
Well, I've never seen you turn your back on a handsome guy unless there was a handsomer one just behind you.
That's because the wise female knows that the predatory male must be carefully watched.
Listen, few guys will squawk to the cops when a dame puts something over on them. Often they got good reason to keep their mouths shut.
No doubt.
Look, Annie, if the boss will give me a go-ahead plus expenses, I'm going to give this idea a play.
How?
Well, by burning up some gas along the highway between here and Ardmore. Leisurely, on the lookout, and alone, and in search of company.
I don't think I like your idea.
Neither do I. Supposing you get bumped off like them other fellas before Saturday when your paycheck is due.
Well, you can omit the flowers, pal. You know, ordinarily, you'd spend at least $15.60 on my funeral.
$15.60.
I'm on my way to Proposition Burke right now. I'm going to see you later, Ethelbert.
$15.60. But if he gets... Say, he can't do that to me.
Had any news from Sherlock Casey yet, Miss Williams? I haven't been notified that he's caught up with any murderous lady hitchhikers.
Neither have I, Captain Logan. Last night, after the first day, he phoned me from upstate and said two gals had thumb rides with him. One turned out to be a lady librarian, and the other tried to sell him a magazine subscription. Casey expected sympathy, and I didn't give it to him.
The guy's young, Miss Williams, like Jack Benny. Let him live and learn.
Seriously, Logan... You think he has a real idea?
Seriously, Anne? I think he has.
Fill her up, sir.
Yeah, please.
The oil in the water's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you look tired, mister. Been driving a long way?
Mm-hmm. 4 days, pal. Mm-hmm.
From way out west or way down south?
No, just up and down. One lady librarian, three discontented wives, and more sales ladies.
What's that?
Huh? Oh, I'm just talking to myself. If you hear me answer myself, call the white coats.
I don't understand you, sir.
Ignore it, pal.
Okay.
Say, did you ever hear of a gal hitchhiker along this highway who puts the big B on guys who pick her up?
No.
That's what they all tell me.
You a cop?
No. It's a dumb newspaper guy who's getting desperate. Charge the gas you put in. Here's my credit card.
Mm-hmm. Casey's the name, huh?
That's right.
Address, morning. Say, you ain't the fellow who takes all those crime pictures.
Well, I'm one of the fellows who takes some of them.
You up here about that killing of Ed Pierce?
I was. Now I'm about ready to fold my tent like the Arabs and silently blow.
Excuse me, but that line is, and as silently steal away.
Oh.
I like poetry.
That's nice.
Yeah. I like Mr. Pierce, too. He's a nice fella.
What? You know him?
Oh, no, not well, just as a customer.
Oh.
That Carl Flagler was arrested. Couldn't have killed that second fellow who was bumped off.
No. And I don't believe that Flagler bumped off Pierce either.
Neither do I. Mr. Casey, I have heard something about a girl hitchhiker.
You have?
Yeah.
Look, if it's anything I can use, you'll get $100 in the morning express, pal. And your name will be kept dark if you want it that way.
No. I don't want any money. But I do want my name and business kept confidential, though.
All right, that's how it'll be.
All right. I'm not going to stall or beat around a bush. I didn't just hear about a girl hitchhiker. One was in my car, and she took me.
Pal, you're the break I've been praying for.
That goes double. I felt like a skunk for not going to cops, is what I got to tell you, but I'm a family man, Mr. Casey. I got kids. I live in a small town, and if I told the police about me picking up a girl hitchhiker...
Yeah, I know. Go ahead.
Well, since this girl's pulled her stuff from a lot of other fellas besides me, so I was hoping one of them would speak up.
Tell me about the girl. Well,
here's the words. Just 3 weeks ago, come Tuesday, I was driving alone to the big town when, stand beside the highway, I saw a young woman. She had one of those little overnight bags in one hand, and she wasn't someone like some do, but just standing there looking wistful.
Oh, yeah. I've fallen for that approach.
The wind was blowing, pulling her dress kind of tight against her figure, and she had a swell figure. You know what I thought to myself?
Maybe you better not tell me.
Huh? Oh, well, anyway, it sounded crazy, and it was crazy, but I said to myself, Dan Reynolds, that girl with a dress flapping like wings, looks like an angel of the road.
Road angel, huh?
Like I remarked a while back, I like poetry.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, well, I stopped, and the girl got in, and before we'd driven together a dozen miles, she'd given me reason to believe she wasn't any angel. She suggested I turn off into a side road and park.
Oh?
She made the suggestion with a gun poked against my ribs.
Ah, see.
It was one of those snub-nosed revolvers. A 38, I think.
A 38 killed Pierce.
Yeah, so I read in the papers. If this girl had been a man, I might have tried to take it away from him. As it was, I just let her take my money. Pierce and that other fellow she killed must have acted different. The cops found my car the next day. I'd simply report it stolen while parked.
Look, tell me everything you can remember about this gal, Mr. Reynolds.
Well, I'm not too good at remembering faces. Details, that is. She had sort of medium-colored hair, I think. Blue eyes, or maybe brown. She wasn't exactly tall, short neither. Ah, but her figure.
Mm-hmm. I look for a road angel.
That's her, Mr. Casey. Till after she gets inside a man's car.
Oh, 300 more miles up and down. A no road angel. Bah. This job is driving me nuts, I think. can I give you a lift, sister?
Oh, thanks. I was hoping somebody would stop.
Oh, sure. Let me put that little bag of yours in the bag.
Oh, it doesn't take up much room. I'll keep it beside me.
Oh, okay. How far are you going?
Canesville. A few miles this side of it, really. You going that far?
Sure. Farther. Right through.
Oh, that's fine.
Beginning to think so, too. My name is Casey. You care to give me yours?
Why not? I'm Doris Chapman.
Doris. Okay. Or do you want to be Miss Chapman?
Does your wife permit strangers to call her by her first name?
My wife? You know, a husband never knows what his wife permits strangers to do when he's not around.
That's a very cynical statement.
Oh, yeah, I'm a real cynical husband. You married?
No.
Engaged? Divorced?
No.
How old are you?
I'm 21, Mr. Casey. But aren't those rather personal questions?
I'm beginning to wonder.
About what?
Angels.
Angels?
Uh-huh. Maybe the wrong angel.
Well, Mr. Casey, I had to leave college several months ago and take a full-time job.
Uh-huh.
Luckily, I found a nice one with a lovely family. The job pays well, but supporting my younger brother, I must economize.
Oh, sure, sure.
Well, that's why I try to save bus fare, as I've done with you.
Mm.
Oh, I didn't mean to tell you all this, but you've been nice. Not like a lot of men I've met, so I owed you an explanation.
Oh, no, you didn't. Not at all, you do. Gee, I'm mighty glad you felt like giving it to me, though. You're an okay kid. How often can a guy be wrong?
Men are always wrong.
What?
This is a gun you feel in your side, Sap.
Why, I see it is. It's a 38, snub-nosed.
Turn right.
You're calling the turns.
I always do.
Boy, you really fooled me with that act of yours.
I've got different acts for different men.
You know your men, huh?
I've had reason to know them. They're all lousy. Now stop your car. Now get out.
Okay.
Give me your dough.
Here's my wallet. Help yourself.
Thanks. Now take a nice long walk. That's what a man told me to do one time when he threw me out of his car. So long, Sap.
So long, Angel. How could she? Oh, how will I ever explain this? All right, razz me. Go ahead, needle me, Annie. Give me the complete works. I had the girl right there in my car, and then she took me like, oh, nuts.
I'm not even going to ask you how it felt to get out and walk, Casey.
Oh, why not? Go right ahead. Only had to walk about 5 miles before I was able to thumb ride.
Yeah, the bad publicity you newspaper people have given hitchhikers must make the racket pretty tough.
Oh, Logan.
Oh, calm down, Casey. I'm not going to rub it in.
No, neither am I.
Well, thanks. You know, I'd have taken a chance on getting that 38 away from her if I don't know, I just couldn't sock even her sort of a gal.
Casey, you remember pretty exactly what she looks like.
Oh, I haven't been photographing people all these years without looking at them. I can even tell you the shade of lipstick and nail polish she uses.
You didn't have that sort of description to go by. Miss Williams will have it.
Huh? Annie will
have
it?
Me?
Casey, from what you told us, this road angel is very anti-man, which has given me a kind of a sort of a idea.
On and on, up and down. No road angel here, no road angel there. Only road. And, well, Casey said he began talking to himself after a few days of it. And I gave him the raspberry. Uh-oh. It's her. It couldn't be anybody else. You're looking for a ride, sister?
No, thanks. I'm waiting for somebody.
Huh. A driver wearing pants and a wolfish grin?
Not necessarily.
Oh, sure you are. I know you.
You know me?
Same as one soldier knows another by the uniform. I used to play the road myself in a tight-fitting dress and clutching a little overnight bag.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. I gave it up a couple years ago for a better racket. The road's small-time kid. It's too much risk for too little income. Come on, hop in. Let's get acquainted.
Okay.
Toss your bag in the back on top of my luggage.
Swell-looking suitcases you've got back there.
Yeah, a lot of them. Filled with swell clothes. I do all right. Close the door. Let's get rolling. My name's Annie Johnson. Present, that is. What'll I call you?
Doris will do. Doris Larkin.
What college you out of?
College?
Yeah. I've got the graduation papers from Tehachapi myself.
Oh, that's the woman's prison in California.
Mm-hmm. Are you a reformatory gal?
I was in Elmira for a while.
You're a liar. They don't put kids in there.
I'm over 21.
Say that for guys who are afraid of minor trouble. You're San Quentin Quail, under 18.
You're really pretty smart.
Yeah, with my background, I ought to be.
What's your racket now?
Oh, same as yours, men. But I make them pay thousands while you collect dimes.
I collect more than dimes.
Oh, sure, yeah. You rope a sap for as much as a century now and then. But your average is small. And sometimes you hit a guy who hits back.
No guy hits back at me and gets away with it.
Yeah, I've heard you punks talk big before. I used to do a little bragging myself, as I remember.
Does this look like I'm bragging?
Oh, you lug around that 38?
And I've used it.
Hey, I read about you in the papers. A guy named Pierce, maybe, and another named Hotchkiss.
Yeah, I killed him.
Yeah, and the cops are looking for a male hitchhiker to pin those jobs on.
Cops are men, which means they're dumb. I hope they burn some man for those two jobs I did.
You never admit things like that, do you, Doris, except when you're alone with a friend like me?
Oh, I don't figure you for a friend, Annie.
No?
I never had a friend and never expect to have one. My father used to slug me, and even my mother beat me up until I ran away from home. I don't trust anybody. I hate everybody. Now turn into the next side road we come to.
You're going to take me, huh?
For all you've got, with a prison record like you've got, you're not going to call copper any more than a married man would.
Well, I won't make any squawk, Doris. Because I'm not going to be taken.
Oh, let go of my hair.
You give me that gun,
will
or
you
I'll
pull
shut
your hair out.
No, I will. I'm no. not a man, and I don't mind messing you up. Here's Angel's gun, Casey, and you can take the rest of her, Captain.
Here.
These guys.
Surely you remember me, Miss Chapman. And you'll get to know Captain Logan here very well. He's boss of a homicide
yeah,
bureau.
Yeah, and if you'd been as smart as you thought you were, Doris, you'd have noticed that a car was following us. It's followed me for almost 4 days, just waiting for you to take a ride and talk. She said what you hoped she'd say, Casey.
I didn't say anything. You can't prove I did.
But I can, my pet. Under all those suitcases is a tape recorder that I started when you got into this car. It's taken down your every sweet word.
And I'm pretty sure the bullets that killed Pierce and Hotchkiss will match the rifling of this .38 revolver.
And if that isn't enough evidence, here's one guy you may get out and walk who'll talk loud and long in court.
You dirty rats. You lousy skunks. You
Come,
dirty rats.
Angel.
That Doris's .38 revolver proved to be the one which killed them fellas, huh, Casey?
Yeah, Ethelbert, that's right. And that, plus the confession that Miss Williams got, will bring a conviction from even the dumbest jury.
Meaning all-male jury. And Doris is just a little over 18, so she won't go before a juvenile court. She gets the works.
Any girl as bad as her deserves the works, I suppose.
Well, the people who made her bad deserve it, Ethelbert, too. Kids like her don't just happen, you know?
No, they don't. But no matter what it is that makes mad dogs, they can't be allowed to run loose.
Yeah, let's let's talk about something else, huh?
I know what. That money you owe me, Casey.
Oh, never mind.
While you was out of town, I couldn't expect to collect it, but now...
Well, I haven't forgotten it, pal. Here. There you are, $16.50.
$16.50?
Well, that's right, isn't it?
Sure, it's right, but $16.50. Miss Williams, did you feed Casey some of that truth serum you were getting for Captain Logan?
You have been listening to Crime Photographer, played by Stotz Cotsworth and based on the original character created by George Harmon Cox, is written for radio by Alonzo Dean Cole.
Casey, Crime Photographer, on Tuned 2 yesterday from January 13th, 1954 on CBS. The show had an impressive run on that network and others from 1943 to a year after the broadcast we just heard in 1955, part of CBS's Wednesday night lineup at 9. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for The Whistler. From the last day of February 1947 on the CBS Pacific Network, the play called 8 to 12.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. And now The Whistler's strange story. 8 to 12.
At 3 o'clock that afternoon, Danny Brine had been riding high, the top crime reporter in San Francisco, with a nice apartment on Russian Hill, $200 a week from the Express, and a lot more on the side. At 4 o'clock, he was nobody, just another newspaper man out of a job. He'd walked into the club nocturne just after dinner, decided he might as well give it to Teddy right from the shoulder. He'd know about it sooner or later anyway. By 9, he'd had 4 martinis. Wasn't caring too much what he said, one way or another.
A job? Well, I'm still a reporter, baby. If Brother Graves doesn't like my work, there are plenty of others who do.
Graves is an important guy. They'll all listen to
him. Oh, he's a tough shirt. I help put him where he is, and he knows.
Wait a minute,
Little
Danny.
Napoleon, they call him down there. I'd like to wring his scrawny neck.
Danny.
Hello, Danny.
Huh? Oh, Stan, old boy. Teddy, darling, this is Stan McIntosh, one of my erstwhile colleagues. Teddy Eldridge, it's Stan.
How do you do?
Hello, Stan.
Sit down. Let's talk over old times on the express.
I've only got a minute.
Oh? What's on your mind?
What about,
Oh, go ahead, go ahead. Teddy knows the story.
Oh, I see. Just wanted to tell you, Graves called us all into the office this afternoon. You want to know what he said?
I got a rough idea.
He said you were taking hush-up dough from the dame in that murder case across town. Said you put the bite on her. That's why you got canned.
Oh. Anything else?
Told us he was going to make an example of you. That's all.
Oh, that self-righteous little jerk. I could kill him.
Danny.
Sure, I could throttle him with my bare hands right now.
Now, take it easy, Danny. You better go home and sleep
it off. Oh, shut up. I don't care who knows.
Doesn't matter what you think. You keep it to yourself.
I tell you, I could kill him. Well, does that shock you, Stan, huh? I could snuff him out right now like that. Tell that to the boys in the city room. And tell them not to worry about Danny Brine. There are plenty of other jobs, Stan. Plenty of jobs.
But there aren't plenty of jobs either, Danny. 3 other papers in town. And you can tell by the way the city editors look across the desk at you that Martin Graves has been there first. That though it's all very polite and friendly, they're part of a closed corporation. And if Graves has given the word, the answer is no. By the following Saturday night, you're afraid that he's licked you, though you won't admit it to anyone, not even to Teddy.
Danny?
Yeah?
Oh, Danny, I've got good news. Mr. Merrill called me in this afternoon, raised me to 125.
Say, that's great.
Oh, it's more than they've ever paid for a girl singer. And, Danny, I just want you to know if... Well, if you need any money...
Now, wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Well, since you're not working,
Listen, baby, get this through your head. I'm not out of a job. I'm taking a rest, that's all. When I want a job, I'll get one. Like that.
Oh, don't try and kid me, Danny. I know how it is. I want you to remember I'll do anything for you, Danny. Anything.
Sure, baby, I know that. But just forget about the job business, will you? I'm not worrying. Why should...
Excuse me.
Oh, yeah? What is it, Mike?
There's a telephone call for you. Mr. Graves. He says it's important.
Graves?
Thanks, Mike. You see, Teddy? Nothing to it, huh? Just like that. Yes, Mr. Graves?
Right.
Yeah, what is it?
I want to talk to you about your job.
Well, where are you?
My apartment. Been laid up with a cold. You come up tonight?
When?
Well, what time is it now? My clock's haywire up here. Don't know whether it's night or day.
Oh, wait a minute. It's 9:15.
Well, what about 10?
Well, I don't know. I'll think it over.
You'd better decide tonight. I may feel different tomorrow.
Well, Danny, he finally came around. But it's a matter of pride now, isn't it? You deliberately stay at the club for another hour, knowing it won't hurt to let Graves know you're taking your time. It's 10:30 when you walk up to the door of his apartment. Drop him a cordial nod as he lets you in and shows you to a chair and pours a drink. He wasn't kidding about the cold. The air is strong with eucalyptus oil. He's wearing a wool robe, a heavy towel around his neck. 5 minutes later, he gets to the point.
Well, Danny, there's no use kidding each other. You're a great reporter. We need you on the Express.
Oh, thanks.
You want to come back?
Well, I've made up my mind. There are a lot of other jobs, you know.
Not in San Francisco.
Why not?
You ought to know. You've been to the Chronicle, Examiner, the News. They all turned you down.
Well, there are other towns.
But you ought to stay here. You belong here.
Oh, maybe.
I don't want to go into what you did, Danny. I'm willing to forget it, if you are. I think you learned a lesson.
Hey, look. Let's not even talk about that, huh?
All right. You want to come back?
Okay, Chief. When?
You report Monday morning to Stan McIntosh.
McIntosh? What do you mean?
You're a rewrite man now.
Rewrite? Who do you think you're talking to?
You heard what I said.
Rewrite? Why, you two-bit Napoleon. You think you can run me like a monkey on a string?
Wait a bit, Bride.
Well, you picked the wrong guy, Graves. You can pull the strings, only I don't jump.
Take your head off me.
I always wanted to tell you off.
Let go of me, Bride.
Oh, hit me, will you? Oh, you want to play rough, do you? Okay, Napoleon.
Get away from me, Bride.
Let go, Bride.
Tell you, Graves, I'll kill you.
You forget where you are. Everything stops. There's nothing inside you but a blind red rage. The ends of the towel around his neck tight in your hands. It's quiet now, Danny. No sound but the blood pounding in your head. And then things begin to get clearer. The room comes into focus again. A chair overturned. The desk swept clean. Its vase of flowers. The clock. The statuette smashed on the floor. And on the floor, too, is Martin Graves lying very still. You don't have to look any closer, Danny. As a crime reporter, you've seen murdered men before. Lots of them. You sit down, let your head clear a little. Look at your watch. 10:45. You know it's hopeless, Danny. That you'd have a better chance of getting out of this one if you'd murdered Martin Graves in the middle of the Union Square at high noon. The motive, the opportunity, everything's there, all ready for the police. You find yourself thinking of Teddy, of what you're going to tell her, and then you think of something else.
I want you to remember I'll do anything for you, Danny. Anything.
That's it. Teddy.
Yes, Danny, standing there over the body of Martin Graves. You know, there's only one thing that can save you, an alibi, Danny. You've got to have a sworn statement from Teddy Eldridge that you couldn't have been up here in Graves' apartment, that you were with her at the Club Nocturne all evening, just as always, from 8 to 12. You get up, start for the phone, and then stop, remembering the switchboard operator. Then as you turn, you hesitate. Decide to answer. Put your handkerchief over the mouthpiece. Lower your voice. The cold. Martin Graves had a bad cold.
Yes?
Martin?
Yes?
This is Stark at the city desk. How did you come out with Danny Bryan?
Oh, he hasn't shown up. Looks like he might not come at all.
Just as well. You'd have a hard time making him eat crow. Say, that cold sounds pretty tough. How do you feel?
Oh, not so good. Just going to bed.
Oh, I better not bother you, then. Plenty of rest, you know. Keep warm. Maybe a hot toddy.
That's right.
Good night, Martin.
Good night.
Yes, Danny. There's only one way out. To somehow leave the apartment without being seen. Find Teddy and get the questions answered before they're asked. You take care of your fingerprints. Then walk to the door. Open it. Ah, the hall's vacant. You step out quietly, close the door behind you, and tiptoe down to the back stairway. On the main floor, you walk up to the side door opening onto the alley.
Ah, it's locked.
You've got to leave by the main entrance now. Knowing if anyone sees you here, you might as well drive up to headquarters and confess. The lobby is empty. You hurry across it, out the main door.
Well, Mr. Bryan.
Huh? Oh.
You remember me. Name's Bleeker. Horace Bleeker. Met you a while ago through Mr. Graves. I live in the same apartment house. Is something wrong?
Oh, no, nothing's wrong. You startled me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on my way to the airport, leaving tonight for Los Angeles. Yeah, seems the streets are full of taxis until you really want one.
You were waiting for a taxi?
That's right.
Well, look, let me give you a lift. I have my car.
Oh, no, I wouldn't think of putting you...
Oh, not at all. Come on. I insist. That's all. I insist. Yeah.
You help Bleeker into your car. Start south across Market Street. Gripping the wheel hard to keep from shaking. Tense, nervous, a sick, tight feeling in your stomach. You know you've got to kill Bleeker, too. There's no other way. By the time you hit the fringe of the city, you know how it's going to happen and where.
But there's really no hurry, Mr. Bryan. My plane doesn't leave till midnight, and it's only 11.
Sure, I know. I just wanted to give you a little leeway.
And another thing, your gasoline gauge looks almost empty. There's a signal oil station at the next corner. Perhaps we'd better stop.
No, not now. I can't stop now.
We'd better slow down. Speed limit 25. I just saw the sign. Look out!
I didn't see him. I didn't...
Why, you cut right in front of that car. Look, here comes the driver.
Hey, you. What's the idea?
Hang on.
Hey, wait a minute. You bashed in my fender.
Hey, Mr. Bryan, you've got to stop.
Forget it, Bleeker.
But that's hit and run. You can't...
I said forget it.
It's like a nightmare, isn't it, Danny? You don't think anymore. You only feel. And above everything else, you know you and Bleeker must not be seen together now. He knows something's wrong. Out of the corner of your eye, you see him hunched in the seat like a frightened rabbit, ready to jump out if you slow down.
Dale City? But that's not the way to...
I said I'd get you to the airport, didn't I?
But,
We'll take Skyline Boulevard, drop down to the airport at Millbrae. It's a little longer that way, but faster. There's no traffic.
At 11:30, you turn onto the Skyline Boulevard. Dark and deserted now, winding through the trees and the crest of the hills overlooking the bay. And a moment later, you make up your mind. Hold your breath. Pull over onto the shoulder of the road near an old water tower.
What? Why are you stopping here?
That fender I banged up, it's scraping on the wheel.
You pick up a rock from the edge of the highway. Pause a moment. Then...
Bleeker?
Yes?
Give me a hand here, will you?
What's the matter now?
Take a look down there.
Huh? Where? Why, I don't see anything.
You carry his body to the foot of the embankment. Drop it in a depression behind some bushes. As you climb back up to the road, the shale slides down in a rush, covering it completely.
Well, that ought to do it. Come on. Oh, what's the matter?
It won't start, Danny. You reach for the choke, and then your eye strikes the gas gauge, and you turn cold inside as you realize what's wrong.
I'm out of gas.
Ten minutes to 12, Danny, and you're stuck next to the water tower, with Bleeker's body lying in the ditch 10 feet away. Teddy will leave the club nocturne at 12:30, and unless you get that call through to her, the whole plan... The solid, life-saving 8 to 12 alibi is gone. You've got to flag a car, get some gasoline. But the Skyline Boulevard is almost deserted at this time of night. Then at last, at 12:15, a pair of lights round the bend in the distance, and a small coupe pulls up to a stop.
What's the matter, buddy? You in trouble?
I'm out of gas.
Oh, you picked a great place, mister.
Hey, you got a hose or something? Could you let me have a little out of your tank?
Brother, you don't know how lucky you are. Well, let's take a look.
Well, I'm in a hurry. I've been waiting here for almost a half hour.
Oh, say, you know, that's dangerous. Never know who might be riding around here this time of night. Well, here, let me get this turtle back open. But, like I said, you're a lucky man.
You mean you can...
Siphon hose and a gas can. Never catch me on the road without them.
Well...
You fumble around, awkwardly trying to help him as he siphons a gallon of gas out of his tank. 12:30. Teddy might be gone now. It seems 1,000 years before he finally finishes up.
Well, There you are, pal. That ought to get you into the station anyway.
Oh, I'm sure, Will. Thanks a lot.
Oh, here. Take one of my cards. Look me up sometime.
Think I better be going now. I'm in a hurry.
Just a minute.
Oh, what's the matter?
The gas. I think 50 cents ought to do it. Fair enough, huh? Here, take my card.
Before he's had time to get back in his car, you're pulling away from the spot. The accelerator down to the floor, hoping you'll never have the bad luck to run into him again. Somewhere along the way, you find you're still holding on to his business card, and you toss it out the window. Yes, Danny. The only thing that counts now is Teddy. And 10 minutes later, you're on the phone, praying she hasn't left the club.
Hello?
Oh, Teddy?
Danny, where are you?
Never mind. Listen, honey. Is Mike still there?
Well, I think so.
You've got to help me. Mike, too, if you think we can trust him. Only you've got to be sure.
Danny, what's the matter?
I can't tell you now. Just get this. You've got to swear I was at the Nocturne from 8 to 12, that I didn't leave.
Danny, what if...
You said you'd do anything for me, didn't you? You meant that, Teddy. Anything.
Of course, darling.
Well, then don't ask questions. Just do as I say.
All right, Danny. I'll do it. Just as you say.
Well, Danny, somehow the worst is over. The 8 to 12 is going to be the answer. And you know Teddy will make it solid. You weren't at Graves' apartment. You never saw Bleeker. And that man on the highway couldn't have possibly seen enough of you in the darkness to identify you. You stay home all day Sunday, knowing it will be smart to keep away from Teddy now. You spend the morning and the afternoon listening to news reports, waiting, waiting. But it's not until 10 o'clock Monday morning that the phone rings. It's your old friend Neil of Homicide asking you to drop in at headquarters.
Hello, Neil.
Morning, Danny.
What's this all about? Why are you... Teddy, Mike, what are you doing here?
You can skip the act, Danny. You must have seen the papers on the way here.
Oh, you mean Graves?
I mean Graves.
So I didn't like the guy. Does that mean I killed him?
According to Stan McIntosh, you were a hot prospect a few nights ago.
Oh, sure. A guy has a few drinks. He's sore, but...
But you didn't do it, huh?
No, I didn't do it, Neil.
Well, Mike and Teddy have you covered from 8 to 12 on the night it happened. That right?
Yeah. I didn't put my nose out of the club until midnight.
That's the truth, Mr. Neil. Mike and I were with him all the time.
It's just like I told you, Lieutenant. He was right there in the corner booth all the time.
We've been through that once. Let's leave it there.
Well, what about it, Neil?
Well, I guess there's no argument about that, Danny. You were at the club Nocturne from 8 to 12.
Well, Danny, you're in the clear. You feel it, know it as your friend Neil of the Homicide Division leans back in his chair and studies the three of you. Teddy and Mike really came through. Insisted you couldn't have killed Graves because you weren't out of their sight from 8 until 12. And you know only too well that Graves died at 10:30. So you put it over, Danny. It took two murders instead of one, but your alibi is airtight. Bleeker, the only man who saw you come out of Graves' apartment house, is lying dead outside of town by the old water tower. You haven't a thing to fear, Danny. Not a thing.
You know, this sort of thing isn't too easy when you're dealing with old friends.
You're right, Neil. But since you've just heard that I couldn't have had anything to do with the murder, well, let's forget all about it, huh?
I wish I could, Danny. Only I can't figure you're in the clear. Now, you said you left the club at 12.
Yes?
But I told you, Mr. Neil. Mike and I were with him right up till then.
I heard you, Miss Eldridge, and I'm sorry it doesn't mean anything. You see, we've placed the time of the murder at 12:15.
Huh? 12:15?
On the nose. During the struggle, an electric clock on Graves' desk was disconnected.
Oh, wait a minute. You're wrong.
Go on, Danny. What's wrong?
Everything's wrong, isn't it, Danny? They've made a terrible mistake.
What time is it now? My clock's haywire up here. Don't know whether it's night or day.
Don't sit there with your mouth hanging open, Danny. You kept that appointment with him, didn't you? Only at 12:15, and you killed him.
No, wait a minute. I did keep the appointment, but not at 12:15.
I went up there a little after 10. I left at 10:30.
You expect me to swallow that? Who saw you leave? Who saw you come out of that apartment?
You're in a corner now, gulping as Neil pounds at you. Who can you turn to now, Danny? Who can prove you weren't in that apartment at 12:15?
You'll remember me. Name's Bleeker. Horace Bleeker.
He's dead, Danny. Where you left him under 2 feet of shale on the Skyline Boulevard.
Hey, wait a minute, mister. You bashed in my fender.
Lost in the heart of the city. In the maze of streets south of Market.
I'm waiting, Danny.
Let me think. There was one more, another guy.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, another guy. I didn't get his name, but...
The gas? I think 50 cents ought to do it. Fair enough, huh? Here, take my card.
His card? I took his card. I threw it away.
Will you get to the point? Where were you at 12:15? Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, I heard you. I guess I haven't got the answer.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Monday at 9. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company.
The Whistler on Tuned 2 yesterday from February 24th, 1947 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.